Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. And we begin our program with some daily selections from Science of Mind, Guide for Spiritual Living. Cultivate inner peace. Peace comes from within. Do not seek it without. Buddha. Peace is at the center of your own soul. It is the very being of your being. Ernest Holmes. We all know the saying, no matter where you go, there you are. Have you ever noticed that even while on vacation, we may find ourselves or notice other people grumbling and arguing over petty annoyances? We might be in a paradise setting with sunshine and gently lapping ocean waves, and yet, if we are angry, sad, or frustrated, the picturesque landscape is lost on us. Regardless of where we go, we take our feelings, experiences, and attitudes with us. We cannot escape ourselves. That's why finding ways to cultivate inner peace is imperative. Such a daily practice can be as straightforward as setting aside a few moments each morning to simply breathe. Perhaps reading these daily guides, observing nature, meditating, or listening to calming music can help us quiet our minds and bring more stillness into our lives. Or maybe a yoga class or a morning walk allows us to clear our minds. Even with peaceful practices, stressful situations still occur. In those times, practice the pause is a useful quote to remember. Before lashing out, condemning, criticizing, judging, or complaining, try to take a time out to breathe and regain your composure. By doing so, we will be better equipped to avoid merely reacting in a habitual negative way. Instead, we can respond to outside stimuli from a place of inner calm. Our well-being, our inner peace, deserves our attention, no less so than the attention we give to the food we consume or the physical exercise we do for our bodies. With inner peace, we won't miss beautiful moments when they are present. Affirmation. I breathe in peace. I release anxiety. I bring peace into my soul. Be bold, be brave. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Does this thing I wish to do express more life, more happiness, more peace to myself, and at the same time harm no one? If it does, it is right. It is not selfish. Ernest Holmes. For some of us, speaking up in public, raising our voice, or even speaking our minds can feel terrifying, especially if we were taught when young that doing so would bring harm to ourselves or to others. But the good news is that there are many ways we can express ourselves as adults in response to situations of injustice. We can write letters, create art, sing songs, march, light candles, pray, volunteer, and so on. Our time, energy, and resources can be put toward the things that matter in this world. Another path for self-expression is to seek out safe spaces where speaking from our hearts is supported and encouraged. For example, our centers of worship may have various clubs or groups where nurturing people gather together to work for transformative justice with values that include tolerance, diversity, compassion, and love. Counseling offices are another place where we can safely express our deepest wounds, fears, and desires for greater peace and happiness. Life offers us many opportunities to raise our voices, not only in ways that work for us personally, but also in ways that enable us to speak out for others. With perseverance and courage, we may even discover new ways to use our voices to foster greater harmony, peace, love, and joy on this planet. We must be as bold and brave as possible in using our collective voices to encourage a peaceful and loving world that works for all. Advocating for justice is a wonderful way to do so. Affirmation. I speak from my heart. In doing so, I express my love for all. And from the Daily Word, published by Unity, Radiance. The love of God, of Spirit, of the universe, grows as I share my radiance with the world. It is such a gift to witness how beautiful a person is when they're doing what they love, to watch the light of understanding dawn when someone grasps a new and exciting concept, to bask in the glow of love in action. Every bit of wonder and joy that happens adds splendor and brilliance to the world, bathing it in divine light and love that grows as it glows. As each person lives into the fullness of their divine identity, they better express the light of God, of Spirit, of the universe, as only they can. That radiant light brightens the world and blesses everyone. As I claim the fullness of my divine identity, I too will glow with the radiant light of God, of Spirit, of the universe. I will spread that light, sharing my divine illumination by learning and growing, doing what I love, and sharing that love generously. Yes, I say yes to life, giving my full attention to what I am doing. Letting my senses be filled and giving the best of myself to the people I care about are some of the ways I say yes to life. Living fully means embodying qualities of love, peace, joy, kindness, and faith. It means I trust life and eagerly participate in it. My passions and gifts are how I shine the light of God into the world. I do not shrink from opportunities to share myself, to serve, to make my mark upon the world. If before I might have said no because I thought I wasn't good enough or didn't have what it would take to get something done, I dare to make a new choice. I say yes as I recognize the power of God, Spirit, the universe within me, and rise to any challenge or opportunity I may be called to face. And from Mark Nepo's The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have, Not Needing Approval. There are 1,000 ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Rumi. I have a young friend who speaks of the time when he reads stories with his daughter as a time that needs no confirmation. There's wisdom in his phrase, a time that needs no confirmation. We all need to touch down with the source of life again and again in order to brighten enough to continue. Whether we make our way in by playing or listening to music, by meditating, by painting, or loving, or reading stories to our children, or to our friends' children, or to ourselves, when we close our minds like tired eyes and surrender our hearts like mouths thirsted open, we come upon a common source where nothing need be approved or accepted, where no rejection or criticism need be overcome. The experience itself is all the authority we need. Interestingly, these renewing moments open precisely when we forget about ourselves. Like horses with blinders, we can't quite shake. We sniff out our way until we come upon those deep pools to drink from. And for the moment, we are saved. In truth, we drink from this great paradox daily. Though everyone alive shares this moment we are living right now, no one experiences this moment more directly than you. No one can say what it feels like for you to be alive but you. No one needs permission to be alive, to stay alive, to know the joy of touching your unrepeatable hand to the earth. Walk beneath the tree and after centering yourself, look up. As you breathe, feel the solid burst of the tree up from the earth showering into its leaves. The tree grows with no one's consent, with no one's applause. Touch the tree, and as you breathe slowly, learn from the tree. I have to say, I have applauded many trees, and many of you probably have too. We return to Science of Mind for Reverend Emile Gavreau's monthly column, Law of Circulation, A Genuine Desire to Serve. I know that God, Spirit, the universe, expresses through me and you all the time. I know money and the currencies we use every day are simply representations of the universal flow of energy, as is everything we experience in this physical world within which we live our expressions. I know God can do for me only that which I allow God to do through me, and I know you and I are the vehicles through which the infinite universal flow moves. The more we allow this flow to move through us, the greater our expression of spirit in the world becomes. This is the essence of circulation. It is the ultimate expression of the consciousness that lives in, through, and as us in every moment. When we give, where do we give from? In the beginning, it is often from a place of wanting to help or hoping that if we give, we will create circulation or abundance in our lives. Gradually, we move out of the giving to get mode or giving to fix perception of lack into what I will call a desire to serve. That is, to use the abundance we have in a beneficial manner. Then we begin to understand that what we have has been given freely and that we are the beneficiaries of the infinite flow of the universe. in this new awareness, our giving moves from benefiting ourselves or our spiritual homes to facilitating the eternal circulation of the infinite universe. Ultimately, we become a divine center of circulation through which abundance flows. In this state of being, when we give, we know we do so from the truth of our expression. We are simply the conduits through which the infinite circulates its abundant blessings on the earthly plane. And from the same issue, an article actually by Albert Einstein, Love is the Answer, Cosmic Religion. This article appeared in the New York Times and was published in 1930 by the New York Times Company. It was reprinted in the January 1971 issue of Science of Mind magazine by permission of the New York Times Company and the estate of Albert Einstein. Original publication note. Albert Einstein, one of the greatest intellects of all time, feels that the important function of art and science is to arouse and keep alive the cosmic religious experience. Everything men do or think concerns the satisfaction of the needs they feel or the escape from pain. This must be kept in mind when we seek to understand spiritual or intellectual movements and the way in which they develop. For feeling and longing are the motive forces of all human striving and productivity, however nobly these latter may display themselves to us. What, then, are the feelings and the needs which have brought mankind to religious thought and to faith in the wildest sense? A moment's consideration shows that the most varied emotions stand at the cradle of religious thought and experience. In primitive peoples, it is first of all fear that awakens religious ideas, fear of hunger, of wild animals, of illness, and of death. Since the understanding of causal connections is usually limited on this level of existence, the human soul forges a being, more or less like itself, on whose will and activities depend the experiences which it fears. One hopes to win the favor of this being by deeds and sacrifices, which, according to the tradition of the race, are supposed to appease the being or to make him well disposed to man. I call this the religion of fear. This religion is considerably stabilized, though not caused, by the formation of a priestly caste which claims to mediate between the people and the being they fear, and so attains a position of power. Often a leader or a despot or a privileged class whose power is maintained in other ways will combine the function of the priesthood with its own temporal rule for the sake of great security, or an alliance may exist between the interests of the political power and the priestly caste. A second source of religious development is found in the social feelings. Fathers and mothers, as well as leaders of great human communities, are fallible and mortal. The longing for guidance, for love and succor, provides a stimulus for the growth of a social or moral conception of God. This is the God of providence, who protects, decides, rewards, and punishes. This is the God who, according to man's widening horizon, loves and provides for the life of the race or of mankind, or who even loves life itself. He is the comforter in unhappiness and in unsatisfied longing, the protector of the souls of the dead. This is the social or moral idea of God. It is easy to follow in the sacred writings of the Jewish people the development of the religion of fear into the moral religion, which is carried further in the New Testament. The religions of all the civilized peoples, especially those of the Orient, are principally moral religions. An important advance in the life of a people is the transformation of the religion of fear into the moral religion, but one must avoid the prejudice that regards the religions of primitive peoples as pure fear religions and those of the civilized races as pure moral religions. All are mixed forms, though the moral element predominates in the higher levels of social life. Common to all these types is the anthropomorphic character of the idea of God. Only exceptionally gifted individuals, or especially noble communities, rise essentially above this level. In these, there is found a third level of religious experience, even if it is seldom found in a pure form. I will call it the cosmic religious sense. This is hard to make clear to those who do not experience it, since it does not involve an anthropomorphic idea of God. The individual feels the vanity of human desires and aims, and the nobility and marvelous order which are revealed in nature and in the world of thought. He feels the individual destiny as an imprisonment and seeks to experience the totality of existence as a unity full of significance. Indications of this cosmic religious sense can be found even in earlier levels of development. For example, in the Psalms of David and in the Prophets, the cosmic element is much stronger in Buddhism, as in particular Schopenhauer's magnificent essays have shown us. The religious geniuses of all times have been distinguished by this cosmic religious sense, which recognizes neither dogmas nor God made in man's image. Consequently, there cannot be a church whose chief doctrines are based on the cosmic religious experience. It comes about, therefore, that precisely among the heretics of all ages, we find men who were inspired by this highest religious experience. Often they appeared to their contemporaries as atheists, but sometimes also as saints. Viewed from this angle, men like Democritus, Francis of Assisi, and Spinoza are near to one another. How can this cosmic religious experience be communicated from man to man if it cannot lead to a definite conception of God or to a theology? It seems to me that the most important function of art and of science is to arouse and keep alive this feeling in those who are receptive. Thus, we reach an interpretation of the relation of science to religion, which is very different from the customary view. From the study of history, one is inclined to regard religion and science as irreconcilable antagonists, and this for a reason that is very easily seen. For anyone who is pervaded with a sense of causal law in all that happens, who accepts in real earnest the assumption of causality, the idea of a being who interferes with the sequence of events in the world is absolutely impossible. Neither the religion of fear nor the social moral religion can have any hold on him. A God who rewards and punishes is for him unthinkable, because man acts in accordance with an inner and outer necessity, and would, in the eyes of God, be as little responsible as an inanimate object is for the movements which it makes. Science, in consequence, has been accused of undermining morals, but wrongly. The ethical behavior of man is better based on sympathy, education, and social relationships, and requires no support from religion. Man's plight would indeed be sad if he had to be kept in order through fear of punishment and hope of rewards after death. It is therefore quite natural that the churches have always fought against science and have persecuted its supporters. But on the other hand, I assert that the cosmic religious experience is the strongest and the noblest driving force behind scientific research. No one who does not appreciate the terrific exertions, and above all the devotion without which pioneer creations in scientific thought cannot come into being, can judge the strength of the feeling out of which alone such work, turned away as it is from immediate practical life, can grow. What a deep faith in the rationality of the structure of the world, and what a longing to understand even a small glimpse of the reason revealed in the world there must have been in Kepler and Newton to enable them to unravel the mechanism of the heavens in long years of lonely work. Anyone who only knows scientific research in its practical applications may easily come to a wrong interpretation of the state of mind of the men who, surrounded by skeptical contemporaries, have shown the way to kindred spirits scattered over all countries in all centuries. Only those who have dedicated their lives to similar ends can have a living conception of the inspiration which gave these men the power to remain loyal to their purpose in spite of countless failures. It is the cosmic religious sense which grants this power. A contemporary has rightly said that the only deeply religious people of our largely materialistic age are the earnest men of research. And we turn now to an older issue of Utney magazine. And I discovered this in cleaning out my studio, which has loads of old periodicals and papers. And this is from November-December 2002. And it's a whole section of things about what's your true calling, how to find it, and the peace of mind until you do. So I thought we would share this, which I think still applies in this year of 2025. And this article is, Who Are You Really? Listen to the Call of Your Soul and Change Your Life, by Pythia Pay, apologies for mispronouncing it, Pythia Pay, a journalist still involved in the world of journalism. What is your mission in life? It's a question as eternal and universal as it is daunting. Faced with demands of daily living, finding the time and emotional space necessary to figure out your calling can seem like searching for the Holy Grail. Yet, as the articles in this cover section make clear, the pilgrimage you undertake to find your true purpose in the world usually doesn't involve tromping off to faraway places. More often, it means taking a deep breath, turning inward, and asking yourself another tough question. Who are you now? The first whisper of my life's calling came as a fascination for all things old and mysterious. A dreamy child, I was pulled to the stars in the night sky and to tumble down buildings, to fairy tales, ghosts, and the Latin chanting during Sunday Mass. Around the age of 10, I interpreted these vague stirrings to mean that my mission in life was to solve mysteries, and I ordered a professional detective set out of the back of a magazine. When I unwrapped the package to find a cheap set of handcuffs and a cracked toy magnifying glass, I suffered the first of many disillusionments on the road to finding my calling. I set my sights next on becoming an archaeologist. Then came my first woman dreams, the first woman president, the first woman on the moon. Instead, caught up in the heady uprush of the 60s counterculture, I became the first hippie in my corner of Missouri and wrote a column typically titled Wildflowers for the high school newspaper. In it, I set the small conservative town I lived in on its ear by asking people to consider the possibility that they might have encountered Jesus in a past lifetime. The surprisingly thoughtful responses I received initiated me into the magic of ideas and words to convey fresh perspectives on life, and in some form or another, I've been doing the same thing ever since. While this path seems so clear in retrospect, my life has many times felt like a chaotic jumble of interests, tugging in wildly divergent directions. Meditation teacher, clothing designer, historical novelist, astrologer, I've worked at them all over the years, but somewhere along the way, a subtle but uncompromising force pared away the things I was not meant to do and held me to the task I seemed in the end to do best. Call it fate, call it destiny, call it my calling. I'm here in this world, I've finally realized, to discuss and write about what first lifted my gaze to the nightly sky as a child, the deeper mythic side of life. This discovery feels less like evolving into someone new than like returning to who I always was in the first place. You never lose the image in which your soul is shaped, writes Jungian psychologist James Hillman in The Soul's Code, In Search of Character and Calling. Everyone is marked. Each of us is singular. To find our mission in the world, to arrive at that place where our lives make sense as part of an elegant pattern of purpose, is probably the underlying quest of all human endeavor. In the privacy of our hearts, we wrestle with a nagging sense of fate, of opportunities missed and things undone, and question whether we are living the life we were meant to live. Unlike great religious prophets whose callings were revealed in heavenly voices, or those rare geniuses born with an unmistakable talent, most people must struggle to define their destinies amid a chorus of conflicting duties and expectations. Yet beneath the everyday struggle of life, we all yearn for a clear sense of calling that will order the elements of our lives into a coherent and satisfying whole. There are strong signs today that many people, driven perhaps by the uncertain political climate or the shifting sands of financial markets, have begun seeking a more meaningful personal plotline than the American way of getting and spending. Romantic, large-souled ideals from centuries past, vision, vocation, destiny, have re-entered our conversations. In her best-selling book, Sacred Contracts, Awakening Your Divine Potential, healer Caroline Miss notes that she is more frequently asked to help people find their purpose in life than to counsel them on their illnesses. A recent USA Today poll discovered that if people could ask just one question of God or a higher power, a majority would want to know their purpose in life. Why is it that in a culture that reveres the myth of the self-made individual, the search to uncover one's calling should prove so difficult for so many? Financial pressures, for one thing, stand as a deterrent. Some people simply don't have the luxury of exploring their mission in life beyond meeting the rent and putting food on the table. And with money increasingly marking Americans' sense of self-worth, many people drawn to the arts, helping professions, full-time activism, or other similarly low-paying fields turn instead to more secure career paths. Perhaps, too, it is the endless array of choices in modern middle-class culture, along with the be-all-you-can-be ethos imbued in us since childhood. With so much freedom and so many options, how can you possibly know you were meant to follow this path rather than that one? But some thinkers contend that we are each born with a seed of destiny, and that our task in life is to nurture this calling to fruition. People who ignore this inner urging and choose their work in the world on the basis of a prestigious position, a fat salary, or just chance may eventually suffer an inner crisis. According to James Hillman, the original meaning of the word happiness stems from the Greek eudaimonia, the deep satisfaction that comes from keeping faith with the soul's purpose. The philosopher Plato imagined people's higher calling as an invisible daemon or spirit companion that accompanied them throughout life as the voice of their unique talent or purpose. In his seminal work, Freedom and Destiny, published in 1981, existential psychologist Rollo May grappled with the link between the seemingly opposing forces of fate and free will. Countering the pervasive American belief that people can be anything they want to be, May concluded that true freedom comes only when we accept the form of our fate. Destiny sets limits for us physically, psychologically, and culturally, and equips us with certain talents, he writes. Confronting these inborn limits and assets, he writes, allows us to find satisfaction. Those persons who often seem the most capable of accepting the inevitable are also the most productive and the most capable of pleasure and joy. The secret power that comes from accepting our inborn nature is what psychologist Carl Jung meant when he said, "Free will is the ability to do gladly that which I must do." Over the years, I have watched the forces of fate play out in the lives of my children. My oldest son, always a gifted student and passionate advocate of what he believes in, is a graduate student at Yale working toward a doctorate in ecology. My middle son's anxious nights pondering life from this or that angle foretold his college studies in philosophy, while his teenage desire to start a rare wine collection prefigured his recent decision to publish his own local magazine, Dining Out. And then there's my youngest son, who, when he was only 8 years old, used to draw up elaborate diet plans and exercise schedules. As much as I tried to fit him into an academic mold, his spirit refused. Today he wants to be a boxer, a decision that initially upset my politically correct notion of what a life calling should look like. But as I watch him happily shadow boxing around the house and listen to his blow-by-blow accounts of sparring matches at the Washington, D.C. boxing gym where he trains, there's no denying the deep contentment that comes from pursuing what he loves best, and I can only admire him for listening to the voice of his heart. In fact, all the advice from experts in numerous fields about finding your calling can be summed up in the famous, and now almost cliched, dictum to follow your bliss, voiced by the great mythologist Joseph Campbell. Not bliss as the kind of easy pleasure that comes from lounging around a pool, sipping tropical drinks, or staying in bed all day watching television. Rather, it is the inner well-being that arises from doing something that you were born to do. Often this means more sacrifice and hard work than careers that do not involve a sense of calling. Zalika, a Santa Fe-based dancer and multicultural storyteller, says that all her life, dancing has been that place where everything lines up in my body and I feel part of a greater mystery. So strong is her calling to dance that it is pushed through all the darkness and doubt and fear that comes from the difficult struggle to support herself as an artist. Lawrence Hillman, who with Donna Spencer authored Alignments, How to Live Life in Harmony with the Universe, says that following your heart is not the same as following your ego. The soul, says Hillman, who gave up a career in architecture to heed the call to become an astrologer, longs to get up and stretch, to explore and learn, rather than doing what feels most comfortable. Attending to the voice of the soul rather than the needs of the ego means learning to distinguish between the social self and the essential self, according to career counselor Martha Beck, author of Finding Your Own North Star, Claiming the Life You Were Meant to Live. The social self learns early to adapt to the expectations of society. The essential self, on the other hand, is made up of the core desires a person is born with. Only in people who are very lucky and especially wise, she writes, do the social and essential selves always agree that they're playing for the same team. For the rest of us, internal conflict is a way of life. Ironically, says Beck, those who pursue their heart's path are more likely to excel in today's constantly changing economic environment. Following the rules that may have worked for previous generations, but she believes the key to economic survival today lies more in the flexible skills and unique passions of the creative and unorthodox essential self than in the more conformist social self. Often a calling is not so much a track to a particular profession as it is a commitment to a core set of talents and values, what Caroline Meese calls archetypal patterns, that express themselves in a variety of ways over a lifetime. This may mean a career, a way of life, or a creative pursuit. Identifying these elements within us, Meese says, can awaken in us our own divine potential and become a source of emotional, spiritual, and physical power. While a calling can certainly inspire us in our choice of a profession, it is less often a job than it is an area of life that we are called to explore. The postal worker who delves into Eastern mysticism, for example, or the business person who is deeply involved in civic or philanthropic activities. The soul we put into what we do transforms the ordinary into the extraordinary. A life well lived with responsibility to loved ones and community, the care given to eating, homemaking, and other ordinary tasks of everyday life, and heartfelt commitment to a profession that may never go beyond the middle rungs of success can all create the deep satisfaction that comes from living life as its own calling. It can take decades before a calling becomes clear. This is especially true for those who are born with a multitude of talents. Nearing 40, Goethe, the giant of German literature, could be found wandering through Italy asking himself, am I a poet, artist, or scientist? Likewise, the renowned psychologist William James intended to become an artist, shifted to science, then moved to biology and medicine, settling upon psychology and philosophy. Some contend that a true calling emerges only after midlife. Indeed, given the length of modern-day lifespans, even if we have picked the right career in the first half of our lives, we might be ready for something new. At any stage in life, though, finding and following one's calling can be a constantly recurring issue as we struggle to define our truest self. The word vocation comes from the same Latin root vox, or voice, and vocare, to call, to pick out the true voice of our calling from the increasingly noisy din of cultural and familial voices requires fine-tuning the listening skills of our innermost being. But because we can never be entirely sure, finding a calling sometimes means risking a wrong step that ultimately might lead in the right direction. Sometimes the only way to find your calling is just to jump into the river of life and swim with the currents. Whether we achieve success or fail miserably, clarity comes only with action. Knowledge of oneself, it seems, arises only in retrospect. To be continually preoccupied with one's destiny, writes Rollo May, is also a way of escaping living it out. A sense of abandon is necessary, a sense of throwing oneself into one's calling. For in the end, each person's calling is a path unto itself, one North Star twinkling among a billion other lights in the sky. We pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications. And you are currently listening to the Philosopher Program with your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. You can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. We continue now with Mike Dooley's The Great Awakening, our prophesized transformation and the attainment of embodied enlightenment in conversation with six renowned channels. And we had started Chapter 5, Developing the Gifts of Healing, Channeling, and Light Language with Daniel Scranton. And Daniel's a trance channel, spiritual teacher, and sound healer. He's been channeling the 12th dimensional non-physical collective known as the Creator since the fall of 2010. Since then, a wide array of other guides and collective have spoken through him. Some of those include Archangel Michael, Archangel Gabriel, Kuan Yin, Yeshua, the Hathors, the Pleiadian High Council of Seven, and the Arcturian Council. He also channels light languages and healing overtones, has written six books, including his acclaimed series, Ascension, The Shift to the Fifth Dimension. So he's been talking about the four cornerstones of the 9D Arcturian Council teachings. And we pick up with a section, Getting Started and Energizing Your Gifts. Now, a few things can really help when you want to tap into your spiritual gifts. One, consistency. Do what you're doing on a regular basis. Once a day would be ideal. Two, get happy. Have some sort of practice getting into the state of a higher consciousness, a higher vibration, before you sit to access your spiritual gift. You want the lead into it to be something that's fun, something you just love to do, something that puts you into a state of alignment. Then sit down and tap in. Three, trust what you receive. Once you start accessing whatever you're accessing, there's a tendency on the part of most people to doubt it and say, well, that was probably just me. That seems very similar to what I heard so-and-so experiencing. I don't know if I'm any good at this. I don't feel like I'm tapping into all the answers that could ever possibly be known. 4. Don't compare your gifts to those of others. People also say, for example, well, I do healing on people. I feel energy, but I'm not getting a lot of information. When so-and-so treated me, they spoke about all the things they saw and all the things they heard. I'm not getting that when I do my healing, so I must not be doing it right, or I must not have the gift that others have for healing. They stop or sell themselves short instead of considering that where that other person is where they're headed. If you just compare yourself to others who've likely been doing it for many years, you'll never give yourself the chance to get to where that person is, in probably far less time, given the rising energies on the planet right now. 5. Share your gifts. Give them a place to go. Be the instrument of their flow. The more spiritual gifts and abilities you find and share, the more you'll tap into and the more gifts will come. More will flow to you and through you because you're giving those energies a place to go, an exit point. You can even do healings, for example, on your pets or on the people who you live with. You can talk to people who live thousands of miles away and say, hey, would you like me to do a distance healing on you? Can I help you with anything that you're working on right now? You don't have to wait until people line up at your door. It's up to you to be proactive so that you can gain and build upon your experiences. Then, once you get the positive feedback that will naturally come your way, you'll find the confidence to keep going with it. These are things that a lot of you will just need to work through as you tap into your gifts. Face that self-doubt. Process the fear of exposure, the fear that people will laugh at you or that you'll be ostracized by your community, all things that likely happened in your past lives that you're afraid will happen in this life. You're not going to be burned at the stake in this lifetime for accessing your spiritual gifts. In fact, today you're more likely to get your own reality television show. Now is a much different time, though you're not necessarily going to get everyone's approval for doing it. And some people are going to think that it's actually bad that you're doing it. But you have to be willing to do it anyway, in order to be true to yourself, to anchor in more of that positive energy, and to bring the world more of what you want to see in it. Tuning into your spiritual gifts is a very important aspect of the awakening process. As you continue exploring and discovering your unique gifts, even though you're not yet where you want to be, understand that with desire and consistency, you will get there. You'll get there through baby steps, gradually becoming more adept at whatever it is you're doing. By moving forward with your abilities, you'll give the world that gift and see it reflected back to you, which is a beautiful experience. Everyone has things they would like to see differently in the world, and this is how you can be a part of that process. As you continue with your awakening, you'll also recognize that your sensitivity is a gift. Your ability to tap into compassion is a gift. Your willingness to feel your emotions is a gift. Your empathy is a gift. These are not flashy. They don't get you a lot of attention. People may not even agree with you that these are gifts, but they truly are the gifts that will help you become a better creator of your reality. Because if you're willing to feel one thing, even if it's unpleasant, then you're opening the floodgates to feeling everything, including all positive emotions as well. You want to create using positive energy and high vibrations, and that's what sensitivity, compassion, and empathy represent, just like positive thoughts and positive actions. They will powerfully help you create a better experience of reality for yourself and for others. Tapping into your chakra system. If, however, your sensitivity makes you feel like you have to hide inside, away from people, it's important you process your fear by first identifying it. Find where it sits in your chakra system. Breathe into it until it's no longer there. When you reach that place of balance, calm, and peaceful neutrality, then you can tap into what you actually want to feel because it will be right there, maybe in your heart or in one of your other chakras. Experiment and have fun moving your conscious awareness up and down your chakras, saying, all right, I know love is accessible to me in my heart, and I can focus there to feel it, breathing into it. But what about joy? Where does joy sit in my chakra system? Where's confidence? Where's vitality? Where's abundance? Where's freedom? Where's peace? Simply explore where each of these sits within you so that you can more easily tap into them when you want to. Or take your consciousness straight to the solar plexus chakra and turn on your self-confidence vibration. Really get it flowing. You can even envision your chakras with an inner guitar string or cord of energy that stretches from their top to their bottom, right down the middle. Imagine you're reaching in and you're plucking the string and getting it vibrating. Then you feel it, your confidence building and building. Confidence doesn't have to be based on something you did or praise you received from someone else. It can just be something you want to feel or something you want to activate. It's not a cocky confidence. It's not arrogant. It's a confidence that comes from knowing who you really are as source energy, while knowing everyone else's source energy too. This kind of confidence is not putting you above anyone else. Ascension symptoms. So, what are ascension symptoms? Often they appear as unexpected experiences in the body that can't be explained and that doctors don't have a name for. People tend to have these symptoms when they're tapping into energy while there's still some resistance. As we were describing before, you may start accessing some of your gifts and abilities, getting some downloads, and finding energy running through you that you're also thwarting. You go into fear mode, resistant to flow, and so you experience fatigue, headaches, indigestion, and neck or back pain. These are classic ascension symptoms that a lot of people are now experiencing. When you have an ascension symptom, it's wise to acknowledge it as such and to ask, is there some resistance I can release that will help these energies flow more? Is there some emotion I need to process to thereby release my symptoms? Of course, you're going to want to take really good care of your physical body. Once you realize that it's a vehicle for high-frequency energies, you'll want to stay hydrated and get plenty of sleep and rest. You're probably going to feel attracted to lighter foods that carry a naturally higher vibration. If you've ever grown food yourself, picked and eaten it right out of the ground, you'll understand what we mean by food having a certain vibration because you can feel and taste it. Those are the foods you're going to be more attracted to. Fresh, local, organic, and natural in the sense that you won't have to do a lot prior to consumption. You won't have to add a lot of salad dressing and salt and things to make it more palatable because you'll recognize that it's wonderful just as it is. This is what you'll be drawn to because you'll be operating at a higher vibration, only wanting that which is going to feel light in your body. You don't have to go from omnivore to vegan all at once, but you'll begin wanting more fruits, vegetables, seeds, and nuts in your system. Then the energies will run through you better, and you'll find greater ease accessing higher frequency thoughts. You'll refrain from putting in your body a lot of other energies that have to be sifted through to get what you actually want. You'll actually be consuming the energies your chakras want to be receiving. A lot of people find that as they awaken, they also want to try new things. But like we said, just because you're awake doesn't mean you have to go to extremes or do all the things that everyone else seems to be doing in the New Age. You don't have to become polyamorous and join a spiritual community and put everything into cryptocurrency and have ayahuasca journeys. You don't have to do anything that doesn't feel like it's aligned for you or isn't something that you truly want to do. You have something else that's a gift and superpower within you called discernment. Everyone needs it right now because there's so much being put out there on the internet in this age of information. Everyone needs to use their discernment to decide whether an idea feels right to them, whether it's something that rings true and resonates with them. That's another reason it's good to be focusing on your heart, because your heart has that ability to tell you how something feels, whereas your mind could certainly talk you into it and say, well, a lot of people seem to believe this is true, and I like that person who believes it, and so it makes sense for me. But when you have to talk yourself into something, chances are you're not paying attention to what you're feeling in your gut that knows this is not for me. You don't have to drink the Kool-Aid on this one. You can pass and say, you know what? I think I'm going to shut my computer off for a while and meditate, or spend time in nature, or spend time with my pet, doing things that actually feel good to me that are all very spiritual, but that don't require a whole new set of beliefs about what's going on in the world. There's a lot that can distract you from your own awakening, including people who tell you, well, you're not awake unless you know this to be true. That's not our definition of being awake. It's not about information. It's about knowing who you really are and who everyone else really is. All else you can take with a grain of salt. You can decide what feels good to you and what spiritual practices you want to partake in. If something new really does call you to it, then perhaps it's an experience you would benefit from. But ultimately, you simply want to be able to go within yourself to have any mystical, magical, multidimensional experience. You want to be able to access a higher vibration, even if you're sitting in your apartment in a city somewhere without ingesting stimulants, far from a place like Mount Haleakala, or a place where someone else might find that it's easier to tap into higher frequency energies. As this becomes your new normal, as you realize that you have everything inside of you because you're an infinite and eternal being, that it all exists within you, the entire world, the entire universe, then going, out there to have certain experiences doesn't have to be done. They don't have to be had in order for you to feel tapped in. You can tap into the pyramids by going inside of yourself, or you can tap into Stonehenge by going inside of yourself. You'll find that they all exist inside of you. You have access to them all the time. That's the place you want to get to in your awakening, to know that whatever is out there is also in here. And whatever I cannot do that's out there right now, I can do by focusing inside, by focusing on the vast and infinite array of experiences and vibrations that are available to me at all times when I focus inwardly. Have as many experiences, inwardly or outwardly, as you want to have, because experience is also what it's all about. As we said in the beginning, Source wanted to experience itself, and still does. That's why all the possibilities for different experiences exist. That's where creation comes in. Part of being awake is realizing that you are a creator being. You create your reality. You create what you experience. You create it all. It's all a projection from within you, and everything you experience is your projection. When other souls are involved, it's co-creation. They agree to be there for you as you agree to be there for them. Living deliberately and manifesting consciously. Now, a lot of people can get very excited right away about knowing that they create their reality, and then they tend to think about all the things they want, all the things they want to create, and all the things they want to experience. If it doesn't happen right away, or even within 6 months, then those people can get very discouraged, put their vision boards away, and give up on dreaming their way into a better-feeling reality, going back to working at things and taking lots of actions and logically trying to figure everything out. What we would like for people to do instead is to realize that all that time you spend focusing on what it is you want, whether it's a partner, a new car, a vacation, or a home, it is time well spent. It's time you spent feeling good. You were pure in those moments, offering your vibration in the focusing on the desired outcome or the desired set of circumstances. You were pure until you started to say, wait a minute, I've been doing all this now for 6 days in a row, and I still haven't seen any evidence that it's working. What we recommend is that you simply make your wishes known once. You can tell the universe once what you want. Vibrate in harmony with it once, put it out there, let it go, and then go live your life. Go do the things that are available to you, that you can do, that make you happy, and that take your mind off the fact that this or that hasn't manifested yet. You'll be doing yourself a great service because you'll be opening up. There's a process in manifestation that many people overlook called receiving. You're more likely to receive what you've asked for when you're doing something you love, when you're meditating, relaxing, focusing on a sunset, petting your pet, or whatever you're happiest doing. Then you're open. Then you're relaxed. You're not worrying about whether it's going to come, when it's going to come, and what it's going to look like when it does come. You're not thinking about any of that because you already have certainty that you create your reality and that whatever you put out there already exists in that moment you think of it. So all you have to do is relax, live your life, and be the person you want to be. You don't have to be anyone else. You don't have to pretend. You don't have to recite certain ritualistic statements over and over again or have the right crystals. Just trust, live your life, and continue. Then the universe will continue to bring you more and more of these beautiful awakening experiences that ultimately help all of you ascend. Michael, earlier you said ascension to the fifth dimension is everyone's goal at this time. Can you explain the fifth dimension? What will that mean for us to ascend into the fifth dimension? It's a higher level of consciousness that represents a higher vibration. So you'll exist in a higher frequency of vibration that will allow you to have new experiences you couldn't have in the third and fourth dimensions. Again, it's all about Source being able to experience itself, and your experiences are part of this. Once you've had all the third and fourth dimensional experiences and you've accepted, forgiven, and gotten past anything that you've been resisting or judging, letting all that go, then your consciousness naturally rises to a higher vibrational state. This allows you to have new experiences of yourself, others, the galaxy, form, and energy. You have instant manifestations. You have a light body. You're able to go wherever you want to go. Money is not an issue because you're creating everything and manifesting it instantaneously. Health is not a problem anymore because you have a light body that you can shape-shift into whatever you want it to be, including whatever level of health and vitality you want to have. Relationships are not a problem because you realize that everyone is source. They realize that you're source, and you both realize that we're all creating everything together. So you don't have the issues you now have with people, money, jealousy, and other things like these because you simply left those levels of consciousness behind as you rose up to the fifth dimension of consciousness. Mike, is that within our reach within this incarnation? To live at a fifth dimensional level where we really have transcended everything through acceptance, forgiveness, and unconditional love? It is your destiny. Mike, in this incarnation, as in we're going to start seeing this among ourselves, I would imagine somebody's going to be the first out there to be seen doing something supernatural, and then we'll see it done more and more. Is that really on the horizon, the immediate horizon? You're already seeing it. So many people are tapping into their spiritual gifts and abilities. You're seeing so many people channeling, speaking light language, healing, and accessing their psychic gifts. You're already seeing what it looks like when someone taps into higher consciousness. Everything else is coming, but don't be in a hurry to get there. Enjoy where you are right now. Enjoy the experiences that are available to you right now because there's so much within them for you. Otherwise, it's like saying, well, I'm going to skip over all these flavors of ice cream because I just want to get to the one over there. Mike, is it safe to assume that everyone partaking in this transmission is probably operating in the fourth dimension because of their attunement to this kind of information, that they've attracted this material to themselves for its co-creation? You made the transition to the fourth dimension on December 21st, 2012, and you've had access to fifth dimensional energies ever since. You also have the choice of staying in the lower vibrations of third-dimensional, egoic mentality. Each person has that option. That's why you see such a wide array of experiences all across the planet today. But not everybody knows they have the ability to tap into new energies yet. Those who do are going to get help spread that love and the higher vibrations around so that the effect is felt throughout the whole multiverse. We love what Bashar has said about how when you change yourself, you don't actually change the world you're living on. Instead, you shift yourself to another world and another world and another world. But we'd like to add that for your every single thought, emotion, intention, and action, you really do change the entire multiverse. You affect all realities and all universes because you're spreading more positivity out into the collective consciousness. There's a universal collective consciousness. There's a human collective consciousness. There's a galactic collective consciousness. There's the source collective consciousness. So you do affect everything. Whenever you do say or think something positive, whenever you love, you are adding something to the whole that could only come through you. Audience member, what is an Arcturian elder? There are many beings who have lived in our star system who have taken on physical form, although we're mostly non-physical or in a higher dimensional range. But there have been those who have taken on bodies and incarnated to be your teachers, healers, and leaders, who set an example of what is possible. An elder in our system is one who has lived in the physical for a long time, just like you do on Earth, thereby gaining a lot more experience and wisdom to share compared to someone who is, say, dropping in for the first time. Of course, you want to have those who are wise, like the elders, to learn from much more quickly. Mike, are you Arcturian elders that are channeling through Daniel? We're a non-physical collective, and so we don't really have age. Therefore, you could call us an elder. People call us grandparents. People call us all kinds of things. We are a consciousness and a collective who wants to serve, help, heal, and activate. We can be so much to so many when we are let in. Audience member, if you could say one thing to those of us who can feel our gifts developing but aren't quite there yet, what would it be? And what was the final thing that enabled Daniel to fully open up and channel? You're perfect right where you are. Your degree of tapping into your gifts is giving you that experience right now. It may not feel like you're at that master level yet, but there is something for you within where you are right now. As you embrace it and accept it, you'll feel like this is your journey. Now I get to grow. Now I get to experience what it feels like to go from where I am to the next level and the next level and the next level. And that's fun and interesting and unique. I'm so glad I get to have this experience. That's what we would say to all of you who are starting out. Daniel was lucky in a sense that he had helpers. He had Abraham, channeled by Esther Hicks, who encouraged him at an event. He had Bashar, with whom he spoke about channeling with. He had Nora Herold, who helped him immensely in gaining more confidence in what he was doing. Being told by Abraham that he was going to channel was a life-altering experience for Daniel because he didn't know what was happening to him. He didn't know why he was experiencing all the things he was experiencing. And he didn't think that what he was doing was necessarily the right thing to do. But just getting that little nudge and being told, this is something you're going to do, keep at it, was what he needed to hear. Then he just needed to sit more, tune in more, and eventually get to the place where all the herky-jerky, involuntary movements and weird facial contortions became words. Words that he was able to express verbally for the first time. It just took him sitting and doing that time and time again for about 45 minutes to an hour each time before eventually he was able to form the words. Audience member, so many young people are dying by suicide because the world is struggling. How do I help my daughter who has decided at age 23 to end her own life? These experiences where you get to the point of feeling suicidal can be major breakthroughs. Obviously, those who follow through and complete the task of taking their own lives have a path that involves not being in their bodies anymore. It is very sad for those who are left behind, mourning the loss of their loved one. But for someone like your daughter, know that she's on the precipice of something here, that there's a breakthrough that can come when someone hits that rock bottom and gets to the point where they feel like they want to take their own life and to leave this world with all its pain. Daniel reached that point in March of 2010. The very next night after he really thought about how he would leave this world was when he had the most amazing experience of his life. That's when energies flooded his body from head to toe over and over. It was like a near-death experience for him. You can, as a mother, look for more evidence of people who hit that rock bottom, experience suicidal thoughts, and the turnaround that came out of it to make yourself feel better right now. As far as your daughter is concerned, you can normalize the experience for her. Let her know that many people reach a point at some time in their lives thinking, I'd just rather not be here experiencing any of this. Also, send her transmissions of love from your heart. Surround her with your love that you can access from within. Of course, it's hard to access love for someone when you're worried about them or when you're afraid of what they might do, but that's your work right now. Your work is to go through the experience, allow those emotions, and get to that calm place and say, what do I actually want to feel around my daughter? I want to feel that love I felt when I held her in my arms for the very first time. Send it out like a beam of light from the center of my chest to her and surround her in that love and light. I want to send the message out that she is loved, that there is love available to her, and that she can join me in this vibration of love if she wants to. We come now to the end of our program. As always, I wish you a beautiful, joyous, and peaceful new week, and I look forward to being with you next time on our Philosopher program.